welcome CTSNet friends to this very special Easter edition of the CTSNet podcast. Today in full flow, I'm going to talk a little bit about work-life balance, something I'm certainly really bad at, but I'm going to share a few thoughts with you anyway. We've got loads on the CTSNet website this week. We've got a really interesting paper on redo mitral surgery after previous minimally invasive surgery. In the war of what is the aortic dissection best score, we've got a paper on the Gerada outcomes and a really interesting paper on whether a mechanical valve or biological valve is best in endocarditis. The results will surprise you. We've got some fabulous videos, a T-graft on off-pump surgery, lima to radial, a brilliant Leonardo Girardi interview that I did at the STS, and Faisal Bakin shows us how to do the world's best CABG. So listen to the full podcast here at CTSNet. Well, CTSNet friends, thank you very much for joining me here on Easter Sunday, and I am here in Positano in Italy, having what I hope is as a nicely earned break, actually celebrating my father-in-law's 90th birthday, where he has already scampered up over 1,000 steps just up that hill yesterday. This, together with the fact that I have taken the opportunity to listen to Shanda Blackman's wonderful brand new book that is just out. It's called Support Group. And actually, it's not just about the support group that she set up. It's all about her life, her early life, and how she has got through being a surgeon. And one thing in the early chapters that really struck me is just how insanely hard she worked. She started at the Houston Medical Center. She was just doing phenomenal hours, 80-hour weeks, 90-hour weeks. She actually then, as a woman, was wanting to start a family. She'd started too late. She couldn't conceive. She then faced the prospect of having to have IVF. And yet the bill was going to be over $50,000. So what does she do? She goes and gets extra jobs. She's working as a NASCAR doctor. She's working in research jobs to earn extra money on top of her insane, busy career. And this just made me think about work-life balance. Now, I have to say, I am not the lecturer on this. You know, I am not great at this. My wife, if she was here right now, would tell me off a huge amount, because we all say yes to things, don't we? We love our jobs, we love our work, but we always say yes. And what do we say yes about first? It's our careers. We say yes to that extra case. We say yes to that paper. We say yes to that conference. But do we say yes to going out with our families or having a weekend away? And really, that is quite a big issue. Now, I think there are some places that are worse than others. I've been to India and China, and my God, those guys work really hard, 6 day weeks, 7 day weeks, working till 10 p.m. The Shanghai Pulmonary Hospital, when I visited, we started at 9 a.m. We finished at 2 a.m. To get through their huge number of cases. They work crazy, crazy hours. And in particular, I think America has quite a big problem here. The statistics from last year are that the average age of a cardiothoracic surgeon in America is 60. And I looked up the average age on NHS Digital in the UK of retirement, and it's 60. So 68 is the retirement age in the UK, and it's your average age in America. Now, there's a big difference, obviously. The pay, the average pay, is $788,000 in the USA, and it's only $104,000 in the UK. But in Europe, the Working Time Directive has made big differences in our work-life balance. We're limited to 48 hours a week. That's our juniors, that's our seniors. And I generally think we actually are working 48 hours a week, and the statistics are extremely different in America. According to Statistica in 2021, most US physicians work 50 to 59 hours a week. And a third of physicians in America work over 60 hours a week, and 8% work over 80 hours a week. So surgeons in America are working huge amount of hours, much more than in Europe. And are they happy? Well, the answer is no. a Doximity poll from October 2023, very recently. 2,600 US physicians. They do this every year as well. 81% of physicians in the US say that they're overworked. And this has gone up from 73% 2 years ago. 30% are considering early retirement. 30% are considering another career or another employer. So there's a lot of dissatisfaction in the US. There's a lot of insane hours. And Ashanda Blackman's book shows there's a culture of working your hardest, not having colleagues, putting it all on your own shoulders, not taking holidays. And you know, that is not healthy. And I think in the UK, you know, that did happen maybe 15 years ago. And actually, it was legislation across Europe that helped us. Now, the pay went down. It's gone down 30% in real terms in the UK, but the hours have gone down 30% as well. Where's an example of amazing, great work-life balance? Well, Sweden is US News' number one best place to live for work-life balance and happiness. And I actually visited Sweden, and I was sitting with this female cardiothoracic surgeon, and I said, well, what's your maternity leave? And she said, oh, well, she was actually about to have a child. She said, well, I'm going to take the first 3 months, and then my husband's going to take the second 3 months. And everything is completely even in Sweden. And I was really blown away by that. It's really equalized the playing field when it's expected that men and women take the same amount of leave. Suddenly stops that taking a career break activity. They also have 48 hours a week. And I looked up the pay in Sweden. It's exactly the same as the UK. So there are beacons of good practice out there. Now, the beacons of bad practice, I think, in private healthcare, where you're paid per case, because that's the point of being paid per case. But the beacons of good care are out there, salaried rules that say when you can and can't work. So just some little thoughts. I'm rubbish at this, but some thoughts I've got. The first thing is treat your away time and your break time the same as your work time. Book it off in advance. I recommend, why don't you book 4 weekends away at the start of a year? Get it in the diary. So when somebody asks you, can you do an extra case on that Saturday? No, I've got that booked off. That's why we're in Positano, because a year ago we booked this, and we try and have 4 things in the diary every year that is fixed, and nobody can ask us to do a little extra because you just have to say no. Next little tip, don't accept colleagues not taking holiday. I was a little bit shocked, actually. In the UK, I went to go and help somebody doing some robotic surgery, and he proudly told me he hasn't taken a single day of his holiday for years. And actually, that's not a good thing. He's not paid to extra because he's not taking holiday. And actually, holiday is restorative. It does make you see the bigger picture. It does allow you to join with family and friends and take a step back and make sure you're going along the right path. So do make sure that you and your colleagues are taking their breaks. If a colleague of yours, you know, is looking burnt out, is looking tired, just get them, just say, you know, when's your next holiday, and make sure they do take the holiday. I've actually written a note about that surgeon to try and force their bosses to make him take that holiday. Change what you do every 3 years. A very good colleague of mine, Andy Owens, said, change what you do every 3 years. I'm bad at this as well. But actually, it's quite interesting. If you've got something on, like you're doing papers or research, or you said yes to something, actually, by 3 years, you can get a little bit burnt out by it. You don't have the enthusiasm you did. So constantly changing what you do every 3 years is really good. And probably this doesn't apply to surgery, but it applies to all those little extras that you say yes to, whether that's at work or away from work. And actually doing something new is really, really healthy for you. My hero, Elon Musk, actually says, always simplify, always take away more than you add. And I think that could be actually a good policy for life, maybe. If you're going to say yes to a new project, to a new thing that you're going to do at work, a new list, then make sure you've taken something away from what you've said yes to. Anyway, on that note, in this Easter holiday, I thought I would just leave you with those few thoughts. We better move on to what we have on the website for you this week. We've got some really interesting papers and some great videos. So one interesting paper we have got for you is called The Early and Long-Term Outcomes Following Redo Mitral Valve Surgery in Patients with Prior Minimally Invasive Mitral Valve Surgery. So if you're going to look for a great paper on minimally invasive mitral surgery, you can only go to the Leipzig Heart Center. And this is where this paper comes from. It's in the ICVTS this month. Katia Schumacher was the first author, but Martin Misfield, Michael Borger, and all the greats of the Leipzig Heart Center are on this paper. And interestingly, the introduction says that 53% of mitral valve operations in Germany now are done minimally invasively. That's got to be the highest in the world, hasn't it? I think it must be. But this paper looks at what happens when you have a redo operation. And they found 187 patients in their own series, in their own hospital. I actually looked through this paper and I couldn't find how many mitral minimally invasive operations they do a year. I think they do about 3,000 to 5,000 heart operations a year, but they didn't tell us what the denominator is of requiring a redo. But why do they do redos? Well, 67% was for further mitral regurgitation, but actually 30% was endocarditis, and then very small numbers elsewhere. And 30% of them had previous replacement. So this isn't just repairs going back for more repair. There's a third of them were endocarditis. They managed to repair again, 18%, but mostly 80% they replaced. And then, interestingly, 90% they did through immediate sternotomy. And actually, they make the comment, it's a lot easier to do the second operation through a sternotomy because there's no adhesions because of having done a previous minimally invasive repair. And that really is the message of this paper. It's saying minimally invasive repair actually makes the redo a lot easier. Now, if you look at their statistics, if you do a quick look, it says 30-day mortality was 6% and 12 years was 38% survival, which sounds terrible. But actually, when you look at the text, you find out that 10 of the 12 deaths were endocarditis. So actually, if you take away the endocarditis patients, only two didn't survive out of the 187 patients if they didn't have endocarditis. So yeah, really good conclusions there. Another little thing that you may not have thought about for the advantage of minimally invasive surgery is that redo. But a great paper, and check it out on the website this week. The second paper for you continues the war of which is the best aortic dissection score. Is it the IRAD? Is it Garada? Is it any of those? A couple of others. And the STS recent guideline on this by Martin Cerny was supporting, perhaps, I think, the Garada score. And this paper provides further evidence for how well it functions. This is from the University of Pennsylvania, because obviously the Garada score is the German acute aortic dissection risk prediction tool. And this is a paper in the European Journal this month. And Nimesh Desai is the senior author. And they look at the data from the University of Pennsylvania between 2010 and 2021, 689 dissections. And they look and see how the Garada score functions, and headlines is pretty good. So I think they are providing further support for this German database score in an American US population. So nice one that. And if you're thinking of which one should I use, then go for that. It's actually a really good tool online. If you just put Garada score calculator, a very good calculator comes up and shows you all the key categories. You can work it out straight away if you're curious. I think the third paper this week is the most interesting. It was for me. And the title of this is Survival and Recurrence of Endocarditis After Mechanical or Biological Aortic Valve Replacement for Endocarditis in the 40 to 65-year-old group. Data from a registry called Infect Registry. This is from Italy, where I am right now, University of Genoa. This is on behalf of the Italian Group of Research for Outcomes in Cardiac Surgery, GIROC. A really, really good database. Great work, these guys. So this is 4,365 infective endocarditis patients over a 21-year period, long-term survival. And they specifically looked at mechanical versus biological prosthesis in endocarditis. Well, surely you've got to put a biological valve in, haven't you? Because, you know, they'll get infected again, and it's not nice biological tissue. Well, you're wrong. This paper says there was significantly less recurrent endocarditis if you use a mechanical prosthesis in an AVR than a biological prosthesis. The hazard ratio is 0.2. That's off the scale. The p-value is 0.039. You know, one in 30 chance that this is not true, and it's a real slam dunker, this one. So they look specifically at the age 40 to 65 people, 549 of those, and actually it was very well balanced as well. 48% got mechanical valves, 52% got biological valves. So it really was very even. It was in the exact category you're really concerned about which to do. Obviously, quite a lot of these are drug abusers. Some aren't, of course. And certainly my dogma was always put a biological in for reduced infection rate. But it's wrong. So the very strong conclusion of this very big paper says put a mechanical valve in an endocarditis patient in the aortic valve position. Well done. I thought that was a really good paper. So let's hand over briefly to the team at CTSnet to tell you what else is on the website this week.
Are you on the lookout for a new job in cardiothoracic surgery? Hundreds of open positions are waiting for you at CTSnet's Career Center. Through ctsnet.org, you can browse jobs and sign up for custom job alerts direct to your inbox. For an even more enhanced experience, create a free account and upload your resume so employers and recruiters can find you.
We have three banging videos for you. I'm really proud of these videos. CTSnet are doing a great job at the moment of getting the best content for you guys to look at. So do please check us out every week. Check out the podcast or just click on the website or make sure you're getting our emails. The first one is part of the wonderful series by Tristan Yan. We're trying to do a slightly sort of little different thing with this. He's put some really detailed videos of every single stitch of his technique for off-pump surgery. I like to think of it being a more relaxed, less intense video. You just get 20 minutes to watch him do every single stitch in real time. We're not cutting away, we're not making edits, we're not doing it in 2 minutes whizzing along like most of the other videos. We're just chilling out and letting you watch the whole wonderful operation in lots of little bits. So this particular one is just how he does his T-graft, because his routine is no touch off pump aorta. He's not going to touch the aorta. He's going to use the lemur to the LAD, and he's going to put a radial in a Y formation, and he's going to put the radial all around the OMs, all the way to the PDA if he needs to. Really relaxed, really great, very low stroke rates, very low complication rate, low transfusion rate. So really good. And I think a lot of people are put off this by the technical complexity of doing Y grafts, but he really shows how it's not technically complex at all. You're saving so much time by not going on pump, putting the pipes in, putting pleader in, cross clamping aortas. All that's put into the stitching time. So actually, he doesn't take any extra time at all. So check this great video out. Sit, relax. He's added a bit of music in the background for you, and there are plenty more in the series to come. We'll be showing you the side-to-side anastomoses of the OMs and the endoside of the PD as well, and some remografts as well. So thank you so much, Tristan, over there in Sydney, for all your wonderful hard work. The second video was a great video I got to do with Professor Leonard Girardi at the STS. He's professor of surgery in New York in the Weill Cornell Medical Center. And he had just come off the stage telling us all about why we need to support surgical aortic valve replacement. We discussed the craziness of how far TAVR had gone. And as the bells in the background chime for the Easter service here in Positano. I will carry on a little bit. And he tells us all about why you should support a surgical AVR. We've actually got a few other great videos as well. We've got the world's best coronary artery bypass grafts by Faisal Bakin, part of my series when I was out there, when I went to see the Cleveland Clinic. Faisal looked after us there as well, which I was so pleased about. And I was very grateful to him for showing us around, and he shows us how he does CABG as well. Really, really good video. And also this week I've published the world's best allied health. I went round and videoed lots and lots of the staff at the Cleveland Clinic to find out what makes them the best in the world. There's also a quick video of with Alan Seo about segmentectomy, and upcoming events on our website is the London Core Review on the 13th of April, on the 10th of April, the AATS on the 27th of April, and finally, in my Where's Diego? Diego's doing 10 centres in 10 cities in China, and today he's in Sichuan province in Nanchong. I looked up Nanchong, and there's 5 million people in Nanchong. He's going to a city every single day for 10 days teaching uniportal VATS. Every single city has 3 million people or more. So well done, Diego. A crazy schedule for you. And so finally, just my honourable mention does go to Shanda Blackman. What a wonderful person, a great leading light. She'll be president of the SDS one day, but certainly I heartily recommend checking out her book, The Support Group, available on Audible and all sorts of other things, just to learn about her life as well as the wonderful thing she did with creating a support group for her cancer survivor patients throughout her career, which is really, really fantastic. So on Easter, we try and take a bit of a break, and I suggest you try and take a break. It's been my pleasure to host these podcasts. We're actually coming up to our one-year anniversary of the podcast. We're going to be doing that in a couple of weeks. I'd love to hear what you think of the podcast, and maybe we'll take a little reset and see what we think with looking back over a 1 year of our podcast. And thank you very much for joining us every single week here at the CTSNet podcast, and see you next week.